Good evening and welcome to episode 4 of the 2019 Vegan Hour. And already people are coming online and saying hello, good evening, Gabrielle. Tonight I have with me Ben Eitelberg, the plant-based triathlete, who is just a little bit fitter than I am. And we're going to be finding out all about health and fitness, how to improve your health and fitness from someone who has been doing endurance sports for like at least 20 years now, isn't it?
More or less.
Yeah. Let's say 20 years is a nice round number. Let's go with that. So, but first, let's find out what's happening. Also, first, let's mention the Vegan Hour, in case you're not aware, is sponsored by Vegan Froth, as you can see behind me there. They do a fantastic range of cruelty-free clothing, and all their profits support animal charities, which is fantastic. So get on to them. Also, Seth's Vegan, which may or may not have dropped in some amazing, there's the product endorsement, some amazing melting moments. These are incredible. And amazingly, I haven't eaten one yet.
So you're basically insinuating that's me that ate that one.
There's one missing. Where did it go? And so Seth's Vegan presents the Vegan Hour as well, and also Ascendian Natural Food Products. Okay, so let's just have a look at what's coming up this weekend. We have three events I want to mention. We've got a Vegan Day out in Brisbane on Saturday and Sunday. It's run by the Cruelty Free Shop in Brisbane. It starts 9 a.m. on Saturday, so all the details are on their page. There's a High Vibe Vegan Market also on Saturday from 9 a.m. in Sandgate in Brisbane. And also, my friend Ben has a plant-based nutrition for performance workshop. Why didn't you put a longer name for that? It's not long enough. No, plant-based nutrition for performance workshop at Loving Hut was at 4 p.m. on Saturday.
4 p.m., yep.
Now, I believe your last one you did, was it 2 weeks ago?
Yep.
You had 52 people.
Oversold. I got into a little bit of trouble with that.
So do people need to purchase tickets and that for
them? Yeah, they do, to guarantee them.
Okay. Yep. So you can do that by going through, I guess...
look it up on Facebook or Eventbrite.
And I'll put a link to it as well later on. So, okay, we've got that out of the road. So tonight's going to be all about health and endurance sports, and another thing here, multi-sport, another concept I've never heard of. I'm really out of my depth here. But to start the show off tonight, I want to find out a bit about you. I don't know much about your actual journey.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I want to hit you hard with is you prefer to call yourself plant-based. we're gonna start off with this, okay? So normally, normally I like to use it on the Vegan Hour. I like to use the vegan word.
Yeah, of course.
Your personal preference is to go with plant-based.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a bit of how that fits in with your journey and why you've chosen to sort of go that way?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's about the fit, because my journey and my interest in eating a vegan diet is from a health perspective. And you know, as we know, vegan can it really refers to anything that's not animal based. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's healthy. Your vegan magnums, your cornettos, your there's a lot of treats and great.
Don't listen to them.
And they're treats and they're great, but you know, unfortunately, a lot of people that make that transition, they think they're going healthy, but they're not necessarily addressing a lot of issues. And my message is from a health perspective, so let's make it known that plant-based, whole food plant-based,
yes,
is predominantly my diet. It's predominantly the diet that I not prescribe but encourage, and hence I like to make that differentiation. It's point of difference.
Is there a big difference between plant-based and whole food plant-based?
Yes, because plant-based, strictly speaking, is non-animal products. So plant-based,
So again,
do you want me to call myself a whole food plant-based? How long do you want a title?
Well, you seem to like the longer titles.
Well, my name's pretty long too, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. So let's So let's go back to you. Now, you were originally vegetarian.
Correct.
And I find this interesting.
Yes.
Because I read a statistic today that said that over 50% of people that go vegan were previously vegetarian.
Yeah.
So that I find interesting.
Interesting.
So
yeah.
tell me why you were vegetarian and then how you went from there to fully plant-based.
My interest growing up, and I guess I've got my mum especially, but my parents to thank, is you know, I've grown up in a household that's always been active. Both my parents have always been active in their
own right. Physically active.
Physically active, yeah. You know, both in their youth, they excelled at their sports. And so being healthy has always been part of that. My mum, you know, I was lucky to have a stay-at-home mum, always cooked. You know, I always ate a lot of legumes, but we still ate meat, still ate fish, chicken, and so on, and lots of dairy.
Right.
And
this is in South Africa.
This is in South Africa where I grew up. And, you know, so I ate a typical Western diet.
Right.
Meat wasn't, we weren't very heavy meat based, but we still had a lot of meat in the sense of still too much.
Yes. Well, any amount's too much, isn't it?
Correct. But I've always had this interest in nutrition for health to some perspective. And when I first made that transition to being vegetarian, I was already believing that that was healthier. And one of the first diets, so to speak, that I adopted was a diet by blood type. And my blood type matched up with, I shouldn't be eating meat, but fish is good, certain fish, and, and this and that, and whatever. And I kind of followed that for many years, and I believed I was feeling better for it. And if I'd go home and have meat, on the odd occasion go and visit the fam, I have meat, I started noticing that difference as well. So that was my early transition to eventually becoming, you know, the lifestyle I prescribed to now. But yeah, almost 20 years ago that I started that.
So you were not eating meat, you were still eating some fish, is that right?
Oh yeah, smoked salmon and, salmon and trout and tuna and...
Excuse me whilst I go off camera and throw up.
And dairy's been the biggest thing in my life, and I'm surprised I haven't broken bones to the extent that I should have with all that dairy I've eaten. But dairy for sure.
Would you say that what happens, I've heard that when people go vegetarian and they cut out the meat, they often replace it with more dairy?
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Eat out, you look at the menu, what's the option? Meat, chicken, a dish with cheese in it.
Yeah, and
Or the sandwiches in a cabinet, it's meat. A vegetarian sandwich and it's got cheese in it because that's a protein, isn't it?
Conception of falling into the protein fallacy.
Correct. So for sure, cheese. Is...
Wow, we went 8 minutes before protein was mentioned. That's a new record.
Yeah. So there you go. For sure, cheese. And it's
So what inspired you? What motivated you then to go, hang on a second, the dairy is not good for me, and the fish is not good for me, and that as well. It's not good for them either, obviously, you know.
It's hard to pinpoint because I never saw myself being in this position right now that I am promoting this lifestyle.
If
I really start to think about it now, it started maybe 4 years ago, and I think the first thing I started giving up with fish because I started reading more about toxicity, fish and the oceans. And you know, I'm a bit of a I like to read a lot, I like to be educated, and one of the things that struck me is, you know, I love tuna, I used to love fresh tuna and so on. Where does tuna come from? It comes from Fiji or New Zealand. That's predominantly where the tuna comes from. It's usually migratory fish. Fukushima, hang on, they're still dumping new people. All these things in my head, and it's sort of, but that's just tuna, what about the other fish? So fish was one of the first things I gave up in terms of my final steps to becoming a whole food plant-based diet. Eggs kind of happened overnight. I don't understand how, I just stopped buying them. The dairy was the last thing, as it is for a lot of people. You know, the casein, it's got the morphine effect,
and
it's addictive.
Yeah.
It's like, why should I give it up? And, it was one of the last things I gave up. It was a journey.
So what I'm hearing is that you were primarily influenced by the health aspects of it. Also, from a, like, did you sort of like get repulsed, say, by the aroma, the smell, or the taste of fish and dairy? That wasn't happening, even though you weren't eating other animal products. You weren't sort of going, oh, tuna, opening a can of it and sort of going, oh, that's horrendous. Or something. You actually still were finding that you didn't mind it, you liked it.
I wouldn't say liked it. I guess it's now, you know, if someone's having a barbecue next door or something, it's like,
because we change, don't we? Our senses change.
Your senses change.
Yeah.
People talk about the palate, but I think it's all your senses that change, for sure.
Yeah.
Especially sense of smell. It's association as well, isn't it?
Yes. So, so have you noticed that in the last few years, that your sense of smell is...
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For
so now when you go to your local Bunnings and they've got the sausage sizzle out the front and you're just like, holy moly, you know. It's horrendous, isn't it?
It's
really... It's and it's so... That alone is a really wonderful thing to be able to look back and say how much change you've done there.
Yeah.
But so you've done it primarily for health reasons, as a triathlete, for endurance sports, to help your performance as well.
Health performance for sure. But I didn't realize performance as much as I realize now, knowing what I know in terms of the recovery and inflammation and all that. But health has always been something that I've always been interested in. I don't want to die at 40 of a heart attack. Ooh. I want to live, you know, to a certain extent until I get knocked off my body. No, that's but you know what I mean? I want to be able to do things, and health for me is, you know, I think I've had a relatively healthy, you know, I'm one of those people when you fill out a medical history form and has anyone in your family suffered?
Yes.
I still don't tick most of those boxes. So I've still been lucky that to some degree my family has been. But now when I look with aid, it's arguments over the phone, and you shouldn't be having this, and my dad is having a bit of this and that, and you know, you could, but yeah, health has always been an interest. Maybe I should have studied medicine, I don't know, but yeah, it's always been an interest. So
what's the difference been for you then in taking out the animal products, the remaining animal products, for your performance?
At my workshops, I always talk about, you know, the reasons why people go vegan, and first and foremost, you know, health. And I always joke that alone, in a workshop, go home, sort your diet out, health should be enough. And you know, but we know people are not gonna just, unless they have a heart attack, then it's life or death situation, they'll go cold turkey and change.
Or cold tofurkey.
Correct. But you know, from the vegan movement, it's a lot of people turn to veganism because of animal welfare and environmental. And you know, I'll tell you, funny thing is, as part of me going vegetarian, was because I've also believed, because I've always loved animals and it's always been important to me, and I always believed that I'm not killing the animal. I'm just, you know, and you go past a farm and it's organic, happy cows.
Yep.
So I was sold on that. I was sold on the eggs being free range and so on. So I was sold on that. I'm still eating a you know, from a more sustainable manner, you know, it's because you only know what you know.
And the death is humane or whatever.
And environmental has always been a driver for me because it's my playground. It's where I run. It's where I'm sick and tired of being in events where you go into the beautiful mountains and there's a lake and say, sorry guys, we can't swim the lake, swim because the lake is toxic. Or getting walking away with an ear infection, or you can smell the water, or you know, water clarity is not the same. So environment and animal welfare has always been important, but you know, again, to go back, my driver is from a health perspective. There's not enough people pushing the health side of it.
Yeah.
So great, let all those people do their bits for animal welfare and environment,
but
we all meet at the same point, don't we? We're all still achieving the same thing.
Yes.
Unfortunately, all the other groups don't have that commonality of they're still achieving the health. Yeah. So I'm pushing that perspective. So that's why that's an important driver for me, is the health aspect.
I just want to interrupt there and just acknowledge Luz Verminda. Now there's a name.
Wow.
Is watching from Japan tonight. Thank you for watching all the way from Japan.
That's amazing.
I love it when we get these messages from people saying they're in different parts of Europe or wherever in the States or whatever watching. So that's cool. You mentioned earlier about you know, and this is still continuing on what we're talking about being, you can be vegan, but definitely not necessarily eating healthy. And this is, you know, this is continuing this theme. And have you noticed in the last few years more of this sort of more products coming onto the market that are cruelty free, but aren't necessarily going to be something we should be eating every day or every week? Yeah, have you noticed that?
Look,
I mean, you mentioned the Magnums and the Cornettos.
It's frustrating, and I guess nutritionists, dietitians, and you know, plant based, you know, health professionals will hopefully agree with me is that it's not addressing the problem, and in fact, you might actually be exacerbating the problem. You know, I sometimes joke about it. I say, well, maybe me having a glass of milk or having a cake that it's a cake that's got a bit of butter and an egg in it. Is maybe better than something that's doused with coconut oil and fake margarine and all these fake constituents that are actually more synthetic products, making up these replacements. Eating a, you know, I mean, I'm not saying this is worse or not. It's just we're not addressing. We actually might still be heading down the wrong path with, you know, the health issues in the country and if it's not one ailment, health ailment, fine, we might address that, but we might be causing something else.
But so, it's an interesting point, isn't it? Because, but that's excluding the most important component when we look at it that way.
Mm.
When it's not a component, it's excluding the most important victim, which is the animal. But I take what you're saying, is it?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, of course, yeah.
The unnatural processed foods versus what isn't really a food, it's an animal product, you know, which could in some, could be argued that maybe it's a healthier option, but it's not for the animal.
No, of course not. Of course not.
And you know that.
And I'm certainly not promoting it at all. It's more tongue-in-cheek comment about, well, if you're doing that for your health, well, you're not, and that's important.
So you would like to see people really, I mean, if they're making a decision, if they're making it from an environmental or an ethical reason, you'd like to see them also just not stop at that point.
You know, Amanda Benham, who's an accredited dietitian, practicing dietitian, nutritionist in Brisbane, we had this discussion. And I said, I made the mistake of saying, are vegans getting it wrong? And she said, they're not getting it wrong, but she feels that, if people are turning to veganism for the well-being of others, of animals,
right,
and the environment, and other people to enjoy the environment, why are they not taking care of
themselves?
And that's pointless. That's bang on. And I think that's my point.
Yeah.
And that's the point of a lot of people is address the issues. That's great. You're taking a lot of boxes. That's amazing. And really, it's really good. But don't forget about yourself, because if you don't help yourself, you can't help others.
You can't help others, And look, I totally relate, because I went vegan 39 years ago for health. So the ethics came a little bit later, and I can relate, and I see too much of what you're seeing of people that are just forgetting that side of it and concentrating all their focus on the animals, which is fine, but got to look after ourselves as well, otherwise we can't help the animals.
You want to have the energy to keep being an activist, you want to have the energy well, you need to look after yourself, or we're going to have to look after you and everyone.
So we want to help people tonight to have some of that energy, if you're lacking in some of that energy. So, and you can help with your workshops, with your experience, which we're going to find out more about. What does it take to be, representing like South Africa and New Zealand at world championship level? That's years and years of building up to that point, isn't it?
To some degree, I've been active my whole life, and you can be lucky sometimes. They talk about genetic disposition, and then there's the 10,000 hour rule. I think I fall more in that category.
I've heard of it, but I can't remember.
The concept is practice until you will butterfly. You got to get good, don't you? look, I'm ambitious. I work hard, and I've never been a natural anything in terms of I've always had this natural attribute to endurance. Sorry, I've always been the last man standing, the last person on the rugby field that can still sprint for the trial sort of thing. Perhaps that's all the beans that my mum force fed me with.
Good on your mum.
I only learned to swim at the age of 9, which is incredibly late.
Yeah, that
someone's
is
lived by the coast, and swimming is one of my strengths. I'm just a hard worker, and you got opportunities. I work.
You're a hard studier as well, as you were saying. You like to research.
And
I noticed when I went to World Vegan Day and I heard you talking for the first time, and we talked about this before we went live, that I thought, this is fantastic what I'm hearing. Of course, I can't remember any of it now, but I was impressed with the depth of knowledge and your ability to answer questions from the audience as well. It's like, that's a good sign that you're shizzle. or whatever the vegan word for shizzle is.
Shizzle minizzle.
Yeah, something like that. So now, you have a business called Fitness Locker, which is New Zealand based.
New Zealand global based.
Oh, it's global based. Yeah. Okay, it's global based. Yeah. Excellent, that's good. Okay, that's been going for over 8 years.
Yeah.
So what is Fitness Locker all about? What does it do? What does it achieve? How does it help people?
Well, the name doesn't really represent what it does, because the way it started was for a bit of fun, and I used to teach spin classes at a gym. I was doing cash, and it was free use of the gym and whatever. And I always found that, in the classes I like to impart with knowledge, and always at the end of the class, always give a tip, make sure you rehydrate, make sure you do this, and then you're going to do that. And then I get to a point where I've got this article I'd love to share with my attendees. And so I'll create start off as a Facebook page just to share information, hence the name Fitness Locker, like a locker, like it's where you found information.
Right.
And then one thing led to another, and someone approached me out of the blue one day and asked, will you coach me in triathlon? I'm like, I'm not a coach, but okay. Yeah. And the rest is history. I've coached an incredible amount of athletes, from complete beginners where I've taken them to shop for their first bike and wetsuits and literally stood by them at the start of the first triathlon and like calm down, to having the pleasure of coached athletes to claim world championship medals.
Fantastic.
So wide range of athletes and not just triathletes. I worked with professional ballet dancers to endurance, anything endurance, anything. I try and my approach is very unique. I don't write on a piece of paper and say do as you're told. That's what most coaches will generally do. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make a general statement, but that is generally what happens. Here's your program, do as you're told. You do it and you do it blindly. You put faith in the coach, you achieve, but you're kind of reliant on the information. Without that, not going to work. My approach is different. My approach is about equipping the athletes, making them understand what they're doing, and letting them make the decisions. We still do the planning, we still do the, you still look at various blocks and you still, I still prescribe the key sessions, but the rest is, you got to sort of go swim.
So would it be fair to say you're empowering them?
I absolutely empowering them. And I use, one of the examples I use is when you're competing out there, I'm not running alongside you telling you what to do and actually you need to back off and how's your heart rate, how are you feeling it? You need to understand. And the same thing with nutrition. It's giving people the tools. And just a note on my workshops, it's a lot of my attendees are not athletes that come to these workshops.
Right.
A lot of them aren't even vegan. They come to get information, and is it going to inspire? And I tell people what I might say now is not completely true, but at least I'm inspiring you to go look it up, learn, and understand it yourself. And if you understand, you get better buy-in, and then it's like, it makes sense. I'm getting more out of it. And I want to learn more. I still give the guidance. I'm still there. I'm still overseeing the training. I'm still giving feedback, but I'm trying to make people get it. And I think that's the most empowering thing you can do in anything in life. And with nutrition, it's the most important thing, because, people walk away from my workshop and say, that's great, but I don't know how to cook, or I don't know where to start, or I don't. Okay, but you need, read a book or attend a cooking class. I've attended some amazing cooking. One was down in Malimbimbi.
Oh yeah.
So Byron Bay, a 3-day vegan.
Was that by my friend?
Vince.
Who was it?
Karen.
Oh right, yeah. I know of, but haven't met in person.
Amazing. Yeah. 3 days, 60 recipes.
Yeah.
It gave me the confidence to pick up a knife and start buying more than just a carrot, a broccoli, and a potato. I can actually go to produce. I don't know what I'm going to do with this, but I've got some ideas and how to combine things and make it. I'm confident in the kitchen because of experiences like that, because I've gone and equipped myself. And I think that's what people need to do. They need to have some confidence. And get out there. So my coaching, that's how it's evolved. I've run a lot of training camps through the years, and again, the camps are about education. It's, you go and smash yourself in the bike, the run, you do ridiculous mileage, but then I'll put a documentary on. I'll do some educational sessions. I'll invite people to have a little panel, and let's have a topic. There's always a topic every year. There's always a theme people are interested in. Let's discuss it. Yeah. So people walk away with, they've trained, they've had fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a family, it's a community. Mm-hmm. When fitness like first started, I had various coaches around New Zealand. My dream was to create hubs of different coaches, but it didn't matter where you competed, you had a family. You had people that you felt part of. Logistics, it's hard, doesn't always sustain itself, but that's what Fitness Soccer became. It became a source of information. The coaching's a part of it, but it's the athletes that make it. And I've been fortunate. Athletes have been with me since 8 years ago, still with me. And
fantastic.
And can only be grateful to them. It's a passion of mine. I've always been passionate about it, helping people achieve their goals, and my way is to do it through sport.
How satisfying is that?
It's amazing. Ironman New Zealand just happened 2 days ago, 3 days ago.
Ironman New Zealand.
I had three athletes do the full Ironman, two of them first timers.
And these three were three that you trained?
Three that I coach, two of them plant based. Inspired. They were also vegetarian at the time, but inspired to take the plunge, and I can, I'm convinced that there's been so many things, especially the lady that I coach, that she's experienced in the last 9 months, that it's the plant-based that's helped her recover from certain things.
Yes.
The energy, for her, might embarrass her now online, but you know, riding a bike, she's superb, a phenomenal swimmer, phenomenal runner. Biking, she's petrified of being on the road, you know, and that journey from there to completing 180 k's on the day, running this superb marathon on pants. Absolutely get a buzz every single time. Every athlete of mine that competed on the weekend, every athlete of mine every weekend, it's to have a part of that. It's all them, but so to have a part of it, it's amazing.
In empowering others, you're actually feeling that you're getting empowered yourself.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
You're performing this incredible service, getting people to be a better version of themselves.
That's just what drives me to keep. Yeah. And that's the same thing with these workshops. If I'm in front of a big crowd and if I can inspire 5 people out of 50,
you've done.
One person is enough, you know. Yeah, if I get a message from one, which I do. Yes. I get a few and they say thank you and I've done this, or 3 weeks later out of the blue I can't even remember who the person is, hey, you've inspired me, look what I've done.
So with your experience then with the different athletes that you've trained over the years, obviously only a certain percentage of them chose to be plant-based.
I don't,
because that's not something you're going to force on them. You can't control that aspect of it. Have you been able to sort of document or notice the difference between, performance levels or maybe symptoms of plant-based versus non-plant-based?
It's a hard one. At my workshops as well, I talk about, it's anecdotal because I feel better.
Yeah.
I feel great. I've got more energy.
Yeah.
Where's the data? You know, we're not in a laboratory where we're sort of taking all your markers and your heart rate and your sugar levels and all sorts of, VO2 max. We're not measuring your VO2 max pre and post, and it's too expensive. Right. And
well, what about situations where that's being measured? There must be studies in that where that's been done.
Not enough.
There are some that you're aware of?
There's a couple based more on vegetarian diets.
Oh, okay. You almost sort of rule out straight away because if they're having a lot of dairy, it's like, well, correct. It's really not going to be helpful.
But the difference, but then again, it's how there's a study, I've got to go back to it. It's because vegetarian 100 years ago actually meant vegan. Terminology.
True.
So
true.
Look, there's a fantastic documentary that just keeps being delayed, but The Game Changer.
The Game Changers. Is it released yet?
No, this is the problem. For 2 years, I've been like, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Look, one of the things I am going to start getting into, and some of my athletes are aware of this, is one of the tools I use in coaching is measuring heart rate variability.
Heart rate variability.
Okay. So everyone knows about heart rate.
Yes.
And your resting heart rate. What's your resting heart rate in the morning? You take a measurement. And basically, heart rate is the amount of beats per minute.
Yeah.
You know? So what's your resting heart rate? 40, 45, 50, 60, whatever. That's how many beats. Heart rate variability is the interbeat variation or variability in between each heartbeat.
Interesting.
Now, the people would think, let's say for argument's sake, that your heart rate is 60 beats a minute, that the gap between each heartbeat is 1 second. It's not. If it is, you've got a serious problem. It's the variation. So the gap between one might be 1.3 seconds, the next one might be 0.8 seconds, the next one might be 1.1, the next. So the bigger the variation, the less stressed you are. Now, stress can mean anything from poor eating to poor sleep to actual work stress to irritability, mood, being sick and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I've been using heart rate variability as a measure of the state of recovery for myself, and that's what determines the type of training I'll do on the day. If it's a poor score, I'll back off, I'll sleep in, let myself recover.
Right.
If it's a better score, I'm all good to go, off we go. And as of this year, it's something I'm now going to start rolling out to some of my athletes that want to buy into it.
Yeah.
And I affirm, because nutrition is a stressor. If you eat poorly, the score will suffer because of the inflammation you may be causing and you know, your digestive tract's not working as efficiently, etc. And look, it's not scientific because there's too many variables. You might be eating well, but then have poor night's sleep. That's what affects the score.
Yes.
But I believe that over time, we might start seeing a trend somewhere from a nutrition point of view. And especially for my athletes that are completely meat eaters, that might translate. Let's see if there's some data that correlates. So heart rate variability is a tool I currently use in coaching. I've been using it on myself personally for 4 years.
Yeah.
That's a great tool. And but look, in terms of science, it's very little. I'm sure there's studies happening right now.
Yeah.
But look, let's forget about sport. Your health is enough.
There's good point.
Irrefutable evidence that says.
I mean, you've got to live with yourself every day, haven't you?
Do you want to do one Ironman, or do you want to be a legend and do 20?
Yeah.
You know, Look at the big picture. You know, you do sport for health reasons, you do sport to relieve stress, you do sport to take you out of the rat race. Why are you doing it for a year or two? Do it for 30 years, do it for 4 years, do it for a lifetime. So look after yourself, irrespective of whether you're gonna get faster or not, doesn't matter. The fact that you're out there doing it is the most important thing.
I just want to say, Gabriel has said, you're awesome, Ben. Best comment so far.
Thank you.
How do you measure heart rate variability? Is it easily done?
So in hospitals, can hook you up to ECGs and all that kind of stuff. And they've been using it in hospitals as a precursor to heart attacks. So the other thing that is important to note is heart rate variability is the first sign that something's going to be up. By the time you read a resting heart rate that's maybe 10 beats higher than usual, already something's up. But the heart rate variability is precursor. So in the modern world now, there's products that you can wear as a ring. There's a product that you can wear as a ring will measure heart rate variability.
Really?
There's a lot of contraptions that I use that are you clip onto the end of the finger and you either Bluetooth it or plug it straight into the jack of your iPhone or your phone. And it measures it. There's some super hardcore.
Who knew about this? Tell me if you knew about this.
Super hardcore programming that happens, measures the difference in your sympathetic, parasympathetic nervous system.
Yeah,
and your parasympathetic is your rest and digest. Your sympathetic is your fight or flight. Mm-hmm. So if your sympathetic is high, it means it's fighting something. Your parasympathetic is higher, that means it's rested. And so it measures all that. And look, without getting into the nitty gritty, it's a useful tool. It's accessible. You know, and you download an app. You can pay a bit more to get more data. I do the data analysis for my athletes. You just have a contraption measure every day and. Let's forget about nutrition, let's just look at your health and it's going to tell you where you're at with stress. And look at the markers of where you should improve. Maybe you're not sleeping enough.
Yes.
Maybe you're not hydrating enough.
Do you find common factors or that, like people not getting, like generally speaking, not coming to you, they're not getting enough sleep or they're stressed because of some common thing like maybe their family's driving them up the wall or something. Do you hear that again and again? Is it just a whole wide range?
It's everything. I've worked with a wide range of people and a wide range of ailments that they suffer, you know, recovering from cancer. I've had people with various forms of substance abuse, you know, people with alcohol and
you've been able to steer them in the right direction?
I've fixed people and so on, but I've come across it and to still have that ability to give some advice, give some input. I feel that sometimes people see a coach as someone that they can rely on, they can trust, even if it's like, well, it's not even my domain, but okay, I'll listen. People come from all over. Sleep, you mentioned, it's a critical thing that the whole world is suffering from. I'm sorry to say,
you're right. And there's a whole even mindset around it of like, oh, I went on 3 hours sleep last night. Like it's a bravado sort of thing.
I used to do that.
And I feel like saying to the person, you're an idiot. You know, what are you trying to do? Kill yourself?
When we talk about recovery, nutrition is an important component of recovery.
Yeah.
But there's actually three components. And hydration and sleep are the other two.
Hydration is another thing.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfectly timed.
There we go.
Hydration is a thing that has come up a lot with my parents because they're in that, that age group where when they were younger, nobody was carrying around bottles of water and always making sure that they were.
But they could drink from the river in those days, didn't they?
Probably, yeah. Well, it was pre-dinosaur days, so I mean, my parents are getting on a bit. So, but you know, that's a relatively recent thing where people are carrying bottled water or whatever with them, you know, to keep hydrated.
But I'll counter that and I'll say what they didn't live in is a society of everything being air conditioned.
Oh, good point.
And the funny thing is athletes will come to me, I always run a track session on a Monday night and people come to me, oh, I'm feeling a bit flat, and can you give me some tips of what should I snack on in the afternoon and what should I eat? And it's like, it's not your eating, you're dehydrated.
Yes.
Because you're sitting in an office 8 hours, air conditioned, and your state of dehydration is what's causing low energy levels.
Mm.
So drink and you'll find that you're actually energized. It's the same concept where they say drink on a plane. It's decompressed and it's dehydrated, and that's your throat infections. Yeah. People always get sick when they fly because they're not drinking. You know, throat infection means dry throat, more susceptible to bacteria and So hydrate. So hydrate's super key. Getting 8 to 9 hours of sleep, super key.
Yeah.
And your nutrition. Those three. Forget your massage. They're great. Yes. Massage great. Yoga's great. Yeah. And compression stuff and aromatherapy. Yeah. They're all good stuff, but they're 5% of the big picture.
Right.
Focus on the three key things. Yeah. Sort your eating out. Get to bed. And drink, not in that particular order, because you have problems. But sort those three things out, and you're ticking off the biggest,
fantastic,
you know, biggest chunks of your issues.
The Damien says, "Hi guys, hope all is well." Damien is from Vegan Isle,
awesome.
and also from Garden of Vegan, and
awesome, yeah.
which I interviewed Drewin and Ben, another Ben from 2 weeks ago. So one of the things I want to ask you is the mindset involved for you in doing endurance sports. Is it like a meditative mindset where you go into like that zone where you're just like, I'm just at one with myself? And you know, how would you describe it? How do you keep going for hour after hour or whatever? I mean, how long an endurance sport? How many hours are we talking if you're out doing, you know? Give me a figure.
Okay, I'll use my last event was a 100 kilometer ultra marathon. The training, you know, in my peak I was running a marathon every Saturday and then still doing all my other mileage.
Wow.
And look, the 100K, it was a long day. And this is what I told, the same thing I told my athletes in, for the Ironman a few days ago.
Yeah.
The beauty and the problem of an endurance event that's hours, you know, we're talking about 13, 14, 15, 16 hours.
Wow.
Is there's enough time for things to go wrong. And they will go wrong. But there's also similarly enough time for things to be fixed. And so basically you're riding a wave of up and down. Look, my background predominantly years and years of triathlon racing, sprint and standard distance. Standard, just over 2 hours. Right, so in 2 hours, if something goes wrong, your race is over. You can focus for 2 hours. You know, I might have a little dip in concentration in the middle of a 40K buy, but you're focused. And the mental aspect is fatigue, is you're constantly thinking, it's strategy. Do I push now? Do I break now? Do I catch? You know, how do I lose these guys? What am I doing? What line am I going to take? It's intense.
Mm.
But an endurance event, like the swim run events I've been doing as well in New Zealand, where, you know, a total of 9 kilometers of swimming and 50Ks of running, but over 16 interchanges and so on. It's so long that you can't be focused mentally all the time. You've got to think about, am I on top of my nutrition, my hydration, what's my pacing? Yeah, sure, you're thinking, but your mind wanders. And you have to wander, because if you're in this constant state of high tension, you're burning a lot more, you're fatiguing, and you're going to trip and you're going to snap an ankle and you race up. You know, you can't, you got to relax. So look, my ultra, I had some super lows. Where I just started picking up rubbish along the way. And I was like, you know, it's like, oh, some guy dropped a gel. Now I'm not picking it up. You walk past. No, I feel bad. No, I should. No, I feel bad. Okay. Turn around, go back and pick up the little gel wrapper. And then there's other times where I'm skipping past aid stations. It's like, I'm back in and I'm racing again. So yeah, look, state of mind. It's I think big picture is perseverance. It's stubborn and being persevering.
Stubborn has got to be a big part of it, hasn't it?
I don't give up ever.
No.
I've raced with broken ribs. I've raced with, I won't tell you the stories. And overseas, I've had big crashes and lined up the next day with an arm I can't use, and I'm swimming with one arm. And
So that stubbornness, would you say you got that from your parents? Their example.
I don't want to insult them. So I'll say it to me.
So sometimes when you're out there and it's hour after hour after hour, sometimes you go to your happy place. And other times you just wander all over the place.
You know, some people say they do their best thinking in the shower. I do my best thinking on the runs. I sometimes wish I could write things down, but
that's what I was wondering if that's
my mind wanders, and I start thinking, okay, I've got an idea for this next thing, and I start like my brains. But now I'm like.
And then you finish your run and like, what was I thinking? And you can't, That's why you need some.
Happened this morning, 2 hour run, running along this beautiful coast here. And oh, it's got these great things, get back home. Like, oh well, breakfast.
So you've noticed that when you're active, it frees your mind up? It's interesting how it works.
It's the endorphins, it's the blood flow. I mean, what does blood flow mean? The blood flow to the brain as well. So.
Of course, It's something I've noticed like from the youngest age sort of thing. But which is why for myself, I think in my teens or 20s or something, I started carrying a recorder with me because I used to get ideas and I could not remember them. As much as I said, you know, I'm going to remember this, I could not when I got home.
Yeah.
So I did it on a recorder, and then it progressed to a digital one, and then I do it on the phone with a digital recorder now, you know, because otherwise most of my best stuff is gone.
I'm too busy carrying my GoPro and taking selfies while I'm running and carrying...
Well, record it into the GoPro then.
True.
Yeah.
I've done little snippets of my athletes while I'm out running, and like, right guys, here's your update for the week. Oh, but by the way, this is where I am. So yeah.
Okay, so I want to find out a little bit about so you do nutrition workshops,
yep.
And you've got coming up this Saturday, as we mentioned at the beginning of the Vegan Hour, if you weren't paying attention, we will repeat it again, with the world's longest title, which was this Saturday from 4 p.m. at Loving Hut is the Plant-Based Nutrition for Performance Workshop, which 2 weeks ago had 52 people book into that.
Yep.
So that's a very popular one. You want to get along there because the room only holds 50, so they had to have two swinging from the ceiling. But so you want to get in there. So what's can we talk a little bit about what's actually involved in that workshop?
Sure. Yeah. So look, I do a recap, because this is a continuation of, it's brand new content for 2019. So I do a recap of the basics, fundamentals around protein and difference between whole foods and supplements, and I talk a little bit about calcium and magnesium and so on. So some of the stuff I touched on that I feel are so important to repeat, and I'm not really repeating because they're new faces. And then this particular workshop, I talk about gastrointestinal distress.
Okay.
Because the three key drivers or causes are mechanical, physical, and physiological. Mechanicals, you know, the impact from running and position on the bike and so on. There's not much you can do, to be honest.
Yeah.
It'll
The effect that it has on your body.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. You know, we talk about physiological, so splenic hyperperfusion. So it's just, you know, I won't get into the detail, but it's a condition that happens just because blood flow is redirected to other parts of the body. But there are some amazing plants in the world, like watermelon, that contains a chemical called citrulline, and it helps counter the effects of gastric or leaky gut syndrome, as most athletes will call it. And then we talk about from a nutrition point of view, and that's you know, bloating, discomfort, and which, you know, it can come from too much fiber, or people that have converted to a plant-based diet are not accustomed to, you know, the amount of fiber, or you know, we talk about phytic acid and legumes, or if you get phytic in grains. So, you know, eating sourdough versus normal bread, or are you activating your nuts and things like that. So talk about gastrointestinal distress. I talk about how I fuel my training and how I fueled my 100 kilometer ultra on whole food plant-based foods. So, you know, not the synthetic bars and gels and all that, but, you know, a lot of real food that I use and that my athletes use. I talk about maximizing nutritional intake. So I'll use as an example, but like broccoli, you know, if you're gonna cook broccoli, the problem is you're not gonna maximize the nutritional content because of the sulforaphane, which is the active ingredient, but the precursor, you need I've lost the terms, but you got an enzyme that you need to activate the precursor to get the active ingredient, but it's heat sensitive, so what do you do? So I talk about how to maximize antioxidant intake by cooking certain vegetables, or how to prep them. I talk about spices, because I'm Mediterranean background culture, so spice is a big part of my cooking, which adds beautiful flavor to foods.
Well, that's a secret of good food, isn't it? Spices, I mean, you know, that's, once you've nailed that.
Yeah.
That's it, you know.
A bit of myth busting, so around oils and fats and soy products. I'm a big fan of soy, big fan of omitting oil and fats from diet. Well, sorry, take that back, omitting oils, but fat, understanding fats.
Right, understanding good fats. And
yeah, correct. Yeah, yeah. And then I did talk about a little bit about heart rate variability. Just give a little insight. Look, I'm a coach, I'm a sports coach, so let me give you a little insight in terms of how to measure, we cover a lot, and they're free flow and ask questions, and that's where I digress with more information, and I don't know it all. I know nothing. So, you know, there's the information I don't know.
For somebody who doesn't know much, you're well informed.
Look, I know some fantastic people in the health professional world, and I'm happy to pass people on to them for more in-depth, you know, if they want to work with kids or you know, the pregnant woman or whatever.
Yes.
It's not my forte, and you know, the nutritional guidelines are different. So go see those health professionals.
I mean, you mentioned earlier Amanda Benham. That's one example of somebody that
100% Amanda and instructor someone else as well is fantastic. And what I love about those two women is they're also current. because it's very easy to study something 20 years ago and you're following the same. Nutrition especially is constantly changing. What I love about Emma and Amanda is they're both involved in clinical research as well. So they're current, they're up to date. And actually I had something that came out of my last workshop on alcohol and iron, because I talk about iron absorption, and I run it by Emma. Emma came back to me yesterday and said, hey, done some research for you, here's some stuff. I'm also confused, but it's all good. But the point is, it's great. So it's a little network, and if I don't know the answer, I can go get it. Yeah, because people do need to be careful with sources of information online, which is super crucial.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
How do you, when you're, you know, doing your research, establish its credibility or its...
One of the things I've learned is, you know, when they talk about studies, and it's funny because I've prescribed to these well-informed research papers in sport, and now I read them and I think this is... it's got to be the double blind placebo controlled tests, and a lot of them don't, and I've been part of trials where there's only 10 of us. That's not research. So you've got to look for that. You've got to look at the control groups. There's got to be the placebo effect, otherwise it's you know, you're not really getting a proper outcome. Trust your sources, who's funding it. I know people say that and it's quite hard to find that, but if you go to people like nutritionfacts.org as an example, you know it's reliable.
Yes.
There's all the references. In fact, his video is all about references.
I trust
that as a source. And there's a lot of others like that. So you got to make informed, educated. Don't look on Instagram and say that someone said this and this is it, because honestly that's what people do. Because again, you only know what you know, and you don't know what you don't know. And I get it, because I used to follow horrible advice. And I cringe at the advice I used to give my athletes. But that's what I knew.
For some reason, what popped into my head is a certain vegan cyclist that tells people to have sugar and heaps of sugar or something like that. I won't mention who it is, but I'm sure we can work that one out. You know, that things like that, you just go, really? Doesn't it ring alarm bells? You know,
when people, I didn't want to get into this, but you know, people follow the ketogenic diet in sport, and people follow the high fat, low carb in sport. You might get results, and I've seen people get results from it, but what is going to happen to your body 10 years down the line?
Exactly, yeah.
And I'm already seeing the effects now where super hot conditions, they're super dehydrated. Well, no wonder, because your body's in a state of dehydration, because you're losing water due to the fact that you're releasing the glycogen that's stored in the water to fuel you, because you're not giving yourself carbs. One example, end of rant. But the point is, there's so much information like that that just does not make sense. And people miss the direction sometimes of these diets that can be beneficial if you suffer from a particular health ailment and it's done under a controlled environment where it does work, because there's a purpose, because something's not working in your body. But for the general population.
In fact, there's very good results from quite a number of plant-based US doctors now that have, for decades, that have reversed conditions that were previously, doctors were saying, well, you have an irreversible condition, you know, and they've got decades of evidence of you know, taking their patients and putting them into a state of good health, getting them off all their medications, you know. It's like, and so the evidence is there, real world examples.
And New Zealand has just completed a study itself called the Broad Study. Dr. Luke Wilson, who I'm very privileged to know in Wellington, is actually going to be a guest speaker of mine in Wellington workshop end of this month. He's him and another doctor have completed what they called the Broad Study, which they took a certain demographic out of the east coast of the North Island of New Zealand. And exactly that, you know, these people suffered from ailments like diabetes and so on, and put them on in a controlled environment, because they did, had a control group, and it was all, you know, done correctly scientifically, and showed how you can reverse a lot of these ailments. Enough said. There's fantastic people doing some fantastic work. It just needs to get the message out, and people just need to see those sources and just.
I saw a video the other day, while we're on this subject, of a person they put onto a plant-based diet. Within 1 week, he had reduced his LDL cholesterol from 109 to 59. It'd been a 40-something percent reduction, almost in half. So his LDL cholesterol in 1 week.
Plants just about don't give you cholesterol.
That's right.
Just about. I mean, minimal in some parts. Yeah.
Whenever anyone says I have a cholesterol problem, they go, well,
what are you eating?
You know what causes that? And usually they don't.
Well, they don't,
you know, because their doctors are not giving them correct information. Because their doctors aren't living the lifestyle that would be giving them correct information.
Look, and it's unfortunate. Well. I mean, it's unfortunate from their perspective, because the doctors themselves will tell you straight up that how much nutrition did they learn, and they're lucky if it was an hour, they're lucky if it was a lesson, and that's it. They learn a lot of the time to prescribe drugs and how to do it correctly.
So that's where the money is.
Unfortunately. Yeah, look, there's a lot of amazing doctors that are doing good work now, and we can only hope that more of them follow suit.
So. Yeah, and I think, well, things are changing, heading in that direction.
It's changing.
Yeah. So I want to find out about these other workshops you mentioned. Yeah. There's New Zealand workshops coming up that you're going to be doing. But also, we were talking about the Loving Hut one this Saturday, but also you've got another one coming up in 2 weeks after that.
Yes, yeah, in Toowoomba. Thursday the 21st
of March. So that will be a similar thing, a plant,
with an incredibly long name,
which was plant-based nutrition.
Long name, for 4 hours long, it's all about
It goes for about, 90 minutes, 2 hours, something like that, depending on questions.
Look, I try and cap it at two, because people do get hungry.
Do they?
As plant people, we can't stop eating.
I can't believe people can get hungry. I mean, you just have to just bring your snacks in. That's it. Oh, product placement time. You just bring your snacks in and you won't get hungry. So, and then you're going to be going to New Zealand when?
End of this month. So it's a real jam-packed 2 weeks. So flying to Wellington, land at midnight. So flying on the 29th, 30th, we're doing Wellington, 31st, I'm in Auckland, then 2 days later in Hamilton, 2 days later in Rotorua, I'm there for an Exterra event, then the Go Green Expo, same weekend as Exterra, I rush back to Auckland, present there, a few days to catch up with my athletes, and then I'm back to Brisbane. So
I just got exhausted hearing about it then.
I need to start eating, I think, and fuel up. So yeah, look, I mean, New Zealand's where it started with me with these workshops. I started these workshops last year. I did the first one. I thought, if I get five people, it's okay. I'm just going to try something. Sold out. I ended up doing four in a row in Auckland. Did two nights in a row, 40 each in Wellington. I was blown away. Dr. Luke Wilson was there, came up to me, said, you're doing a fantastic job. He gave me the confidence. And
that's fantastic.
Since then, I'm now on number 20 or something of these workshops. It's not my game. I'm not a nutritionist.
Yeah.
But what the information that I provide is what our mums knew, and if it's not them, their mums knew.
Right.
You know, how did you know, we always soaked our beans. Why have we stopped doing it now?
Yeah.
We always used to combine certain foods.
Why have we stopped doing
society.
It?
Society.
Time poor?
Time poor. Yeah.
Chasing the wrong things.
I'm sorry to say, but priorities.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, priorities, chasing the wrong things.
Priorities and what you sold. This is great. It's got all the nutrients, but it's in a box and you can take it all and sit on the shelf for 6 weeks. Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But, you know, I tell people and I say to them, oh, what do you eat when you go away? Because I travel a lot with my sport. And how do you still eat? I get up an extra hour early in the morning, even if it means getting up at 5 a.m. And I prep food for the day.
Right.
It's a pain. And I tell people, it's a pain, you've got to make an effort, you've got to be prepared, you've got to be a project manager, you've got to have it all sorted.
Yeah.
But the moment you eat that food, you're grateful for it. Because instead of having to make a poor choice somewhere, where you buy something, it's better than nothing, it's dripping in oil, it's full of salt, it's whatever, it's processed. Yeah. I'm eating something fresh, it's delicious, food does not go off. You know why? Here's a trick that people don't realize. Why do we have this obsession of having chili bins with ice blocks to keep things cold from it going off? Was it the spinach? Was it the tomato? Meat goes off.
Yeah.
Fish goes off. Dairy goes off. Eggs go off.
Yeah.
You eliminate those foods, you're not going to get...
The majority of your food poisoning, it comes from animal products, 80-something percent.
You can cook a rice dish with amazing beans, whatever. It can stay tepid. It can stay cold. You can eat cold soup. It's delicious.
I've been known to do it. I couldn't be bothered heating it up.
So we did it the other day. So, I mean, once you change that mindset about, because we've grown up everything about, you know, hygiene in the kitchen. I mean, hygiene's still important for sure, but, you know, everything about chicken and meat and contamination and all that. Once you get that out of your head, because it's no longer part of the game.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Oh, life, then I can, you know, buy some whole wheat bread or...
Life in the kitchen is so much easier and simpler and less...
You use less dishwashing liquids, now everything's oily and sticking to the pot.
Yeah, that's right.
So yeah, once, you know, you've got to be organized and yeah.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned about, you know, how our mothers used to do it, our mothers' mothers and whatever. And I'm thinking back to an example of maybe when I was a kid and we go on picnics, right?
Yeah.
Well, picnics weren't like they are now where people would go, oh, well, what do we go and buy somewhere to take, right? You prepped it at home. Like you say, you know, you made your sandwiches, you had a flask or something with your hot tea or whatever. And you took it along and you ate the food that you brought from your house. That was a picnic. And there was a certain charm to that,
yeah.
You know, because it wasn't going to the shop and buying something that's empty and devoid of any feeling or meaning to you because you haven't prepared it or anything. Yeah. Just, you know, so I think that's one of the things we're missing out on is that connection, because when you're working with food in the kitchen, I'm talking food, animal products is not food, you know, that's death on your plate. When you're working with real food, there is an energetic connection.
Oh, 100%.
And you feel it when you're in tune with it, you feel it, don't you?
It's energizing so many ways. It doesn't have to go into your mouth to be revitalizing. I always talk about colors and get colors in there and explore different things. And before you know, it's like, oh dear, I've made too much. You know, because you're getting it all in.
But doesn't it look great?
I love going to the fresh produce places and walk out like, okay, I bought too much fruit, oh dear. But hey, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's delicious. And dessert now after dinner, it doesn't have to be cake. It's a beautiful mango with pineapple, with dragon fruit, with passion fruit, my favorite tropical fruit.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so much nicer.
It is. And you can taste the difference.
Instead of a whey protein shake after training, have some fruit. So much nicer.
Exactly. And the vitality just comes through and
it's a change of mindset. But look, we as a civilization, centuries and centuries and centuries, we've taken to figure things out with food, and we've only done it in the last 100 years. If you look at Asian cultures, Thai food, Chinese, Indian, you know, do you notice they always drop a piece of tomato in the Indian dish, or they drop a lemon and on the side of the dish? That's because vitamin C helps absorption of iron. They have worked it out. So what I talk about, sure, I'll put a bit of research in, but we figured it out and we've forgotten, because now we don't know how to combine this box with that box and that packet, and everything's KFC and McDonald's your vegan burgers at Hungry Jack's or whatever, and then I'll have you're still devoid of, you know, so, you know, I think we had figured out, we just need to go back to our roots.
Definitely. You know, if we can figure out how to go to a KFC or a Hungry Jack's or whatever to get a vegan thing, why can't we go to a fruit shop in the same area, probably in the same shopping center, and buy some real food? You know,
it's amazing when people say, "Oh, what vegan food is there in this town?" In the supermarket, it's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Fresh produce shop.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
If you've got a pot, great, go buy some dry beans and
what about people that say, but it's great because we can now at midnight, we can go to, you know, Hungry Jack's, whatever, and get a burger. I said, you could go to the local service station and there'll be bananas on the counter. There'll probably be, if you're really desperate, you could get a packet of chips or nuts or something.
You'll sleep better, you'll wake up feeling better.
Yeah, I mean...
Look, it's
just where the mindset's at. And you are helping, this is what's fantastic, you are helping with that re-education, with your workshops.
I hope so.
We need people like you, Ben.
Look, it's all about stimulating people. If they're going to walk away and make one change to their diet. You know, I had a couple that came to my camp, because I always say, bring your partners, it's all good. He's an older gentleman, you know, in his late 50s. And, you know, the older you are, the harder it is to make change.
It can be,
I played this documentary, Eating You Alive. And I thought, it's the least hard-hitting, you know. And I played it, and I was surprised everyone said to the end. You know, it was a long day of training. It was like 6 hours on the bike, and did lots of training. And it was after dinner. And 2 weeks after, no, not even, within the week, because he's suffered from a bit of melanoma, cancer on and off.
Yes.
And, you know, he's had bits removed and so on. And his wife messaged me and said, right, made a family decision. 4 days we're going plant-based, 3 days we eat what we want. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Heading in the right direction.
It's those little changes. You don't have to go cold turkey, unless it's a life or death situation where you have to. Well, you have to, because it's life or death, you know?
Yes.
You had a heart attack, you've got a choice now to get that cholesterol down to 2.
Yeah.
if you've got the opportunity, just make it a journey, take the pressure off.
Yeah.
One thing at a time, and you'll get there. And you'll accelerate the change as you start noticing the change.
Well, I'm so happy that you are helping people do that, because that is really, really wonderful. Bringing back the basics, the understanding of nutrition, getting people to eat whole food, plant-based, fantastic. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for having me.
For being on the Vegan Hour tonight. And thank you for everyone that's been watching. We have managed to do 1 hour. That went quick.
When's the bonus hour? Behind the scenes.
You can talk more than I can. So what I want to do, folks, is I'm going to put a link after the live stream is finished to your event coming up on Saturday.
Awesome.
Also, people can get in touch with you through, I've got you tagged here, so they can get in touch with you to find out about your workshops coming up in New Zealand or Toowoomba or whatever.
Yeah.
So also this episode, like all episodes of The Vegan Hour, will be on my YouTube channel within a couple of days' time. And disappointingly, I'll be back in 2 weeks' time. So you'll have to put up with me again. But in 2 weeks' time for episode 5, I'll be back with, it's going to be another health-oriented one. It's going to be Robin Schutter. I haven't spelled it right, from Empower Total Health. So she'll be with me on Tuesday the 19th of March. So thank you everyone that's been watching tonight. Thank you again, Ben, for coming down. And Gabriel says, great chat, guys. So, and you can still comment on the Vegan Hour even after it's finished. So live vegan, save lives, have a great week, and I'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Good night, guys.